give us questions, and I'm just going to kind of read them.
Okay.
And then I'll let you guys kind of take over.
Okay.
Answer however you want. Question number one, am I going to get my golf cart? That's to you, Dr. Stone.
Oh, to me? Oh.
Let me just reference. Does anybody remember what he said when I meet him at the door and give him a kiss?
Mm-hmm.
She can have
anything.
Right. I didn't even put that question in, but I appreciate that.
Here's, I can use this one. The answer is, when we have somewhere where you can drive it and park it.
We have a field in the middle of our subdivision.
No. I actually checked. Our city bylaws do not allow golf carts in the city limit.
I don't believe that.
I lie not. I tell the truth. Let me ask you this. Here's my philosophy of life. Why buy one when I have friends who have one? You can go to Conley's anytime you want and drive their golf cart. She drove one in Florida, and 2 months later, I find out she ran over something. She went over a curb and almost wiped the thing out. She didn't tell me for 2 months. So that kind of deceit eliminates a golf cart.
True story.
Someday. She's gotten everything she's ever wanted in this life. She'll probably get a golf cart someday.
For my 70th birthday.
Yes. When I die.
That will be my first purchase of my life.
Oh, boy. Okay. Hey, that's her handwriting.
All right, here's the first one. We got several questions. We'll just see how
it goes.
question number one here. How do you handle if both parents can't get on the same page on how to discipline the children?
That's really a popular question because we come from two different backgrounds, and we did. Her dad was a preacher, but he was very tough on the first two children, and then Ruthie came along, and something happened. I don't know what happened to them, but he melted. She came along 6 years after her sister. It was one of those, you know, oops babies, and they just, her mom loved her, but her dad especially just loved her, adored her. He never spanked her. Never spanked her. Her mom did, but her dad did not spank her. He would speak to her and crush her, but he never spanked her. I grew up in a very different scenario where my dad would spank, and he was very, very firm and I don't want to use the word legalistic, but I mean, he had rules. And his motto was, my house, my rules. If you don't like my rules, you don't have to live in my house. And so I grew up that way. So I grew up thinking my kids have to be, man, they have to obey or else. And I did that. She wasn't the same way. And we did have a bit of a struggle with that because she felt that I was overbearing and that I was too hard. And in hindsight, I was sometimes. And so I had to kind of balance that. And then she had to as well kind of pick up the reins at times and say, hey, that's enough. And she would have to do that. And that happened when she started homeschooling. She had to have order and discipline in order to be able to teach. And there were times when she would have to use that. So I think you need to have that conversation before you get married, but most people don't. And now you're in the thick of it now. You've got to sit down and come to an agreement on that somehow. And you've got to be willing to bend both ways and realize that mom is not going to discipline the same as dad because she's at home all the time. And they hear her voice all the time. And it sounds like, wah, 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 wah. Dad comes home and goes, hey, and those kids straighten right up. Why? It's a different voice. It's a louder voice. And they usually know if dad has to get involved, it's going to get ugly. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you've got to establish that somehow.
Yeah, say we did try to, and I'm sure you've heard that before, but we tried not to sell our disagreement in front of the kids.
Absolutely.
That's you know, if the kid's like, well, mom said, well, dad said, well, what? You know, and then you get going back and forth. And kids will do that. They're smart.
Oh.
Our grandkids already do that. They'll try to
they pitch you
against their parents. Like, they'll ask their mom, so she'll say, and they'll be like, Nana, can I have? And I'm like, oh, no, we got to obey your mom, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. Like, sometimes just go into your room and say, okay, this is my thinking. What are you thinking? And sometimes meet somewhere in the middle, right? And I think, but it's really important to let your kids see you have a united front. So try to come to that agreement, not arguing about it in front of them. And then we made some compromises. Like, I didn't really grow up with a bedtime. It was kind of like, my dad was like, when the kids get tired enough, they'll fall asleep somewhere. So we sleep on a step or a couch. You know, we didn't have a real structured.
Other people's houses.
Yeah,
or just we didn't
have a real structured upbringing that way. And kind of just ate whatever we want. I mean, mom was awesome. She had always had great meals. But, I mean, we didn't have a real structured upbringing that way. He did.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we'd go to bed at 7:30.
Yeah.
We eat supper this time. So that was really different for us. So we kind of came to a compromise. Whenever he would go away and travel, then the kids would sleep in my room. And we'd stay up till midnight and eat popcorn in bed. And he knew that. Like,
and then the mean old ogre came home.
And so we did have like a little compromise there to find a word.
We did have a rule, and I got this from my parents, that if she said no and they came and asked me and I found out they asked me, they are in big trouble. Not only did they not get what they wanted, they were going to suffer some kind of consequence because of that. So if she said no, don't even ask me. If you do, you're in trouble. So if they asked mom and she said, go ask your dad, and I got to make the decision, I'd make the decision, and vice versa. If I was doing something, I'd say, ask your mom. But if I said no, that was the end of it. Or she said no, that was the end of it. Yeah.
So good communication.
Absolutely. Gotta.
So you're on the same page.
Gotta.
And then not, not letting the children kind of pit each other.
Right.
You know, dad says no, so I'm going to go and ask mom.
Right.
And you don't argue about it in front of your kids. Mm-hmm. Never do that.
Yeah, that's good. Very good. All right. Here's another question. How do you let your spouse know feeling like you're not important to them?
You never feel that way.
I just go drive around in a golf cart for a while. I'm not letting it go. Sometimes...
let it go.
Sometimes earlier in our marriage, if I was feeling that way, I would write a note, which of course you have to be careful because once you write something... can't say it. I didn't say that, right? But I would just sometimes try to write it because I find a lot of times if you're feeling that way and you verbalize it properly, you end up hurting each other's feelings or being in an argument. So sometimes I would just write a little note and say, hey, honey, I really feel like I could use some of your time in the next couple weeks because I've been struggling and feeling like you've been spending so much time with other people and like maybe the two of us just need to have some time together. And I try to write a note like that. So he could read that when we weren't together and have a little bit of time to digest it and think about it, and then maybe come back and be like, oh, you know what, you're right. It's been really busy lately. Let's plan something for the two of us next week. So sometimes that I would do that, and that would work for us a bit.
Mm-hmm. I learned a lesson. As a pastor, my heart is bent on helping our people. And every pastor will tell you this, and their wives will tell you this, that if a church member calls me and says, Pastor, I'm in trouble, immediately I'm out the door. I'm not saying, hey, wait. I wait a couple days, and I'll come back. No, I don't do that. I want to be there. I want to help them. I want to solve the problem before it gets too big. I want to get the tick, tick, tick before it goes boom. And so I would go, and they'd say, hey, can you come to the hospital? Hey, can you come to the funeral home? Hey, can you come to our house? Hey, can you meet me at the coffee shop? And I would go. And Ruthie said one time, she goes, honey, could you put these shelves up for me sometime when you have a chance? I'll say, yeah, I'll get to that right away. And they sat there for about 3 weeks. And she said, honey, can you put those shelves up for me? And I'm like, get off my back. Quit asking me so much. She goes, this is only the second time. I said, I'll get to it when I can. And then, you know, it was another 3 weeks. She's like, honey, I'm not nagging you. You told me a month ago, 6 weeks ago, you do this. And she said this, how come if a church member calls, you're out the door immediately, but if I ask, I have to wait 6 weeks? She was right. She was right. And I got it, and I went, and I put the shelves up, and I now try to do those things as quickly as I can. I try not to prolong that if I can, because I know that was very hurtful. And I could see that it hurt her. And so I had to be mindful of that. And I would, you know, there have been times when I have to say to a church member, I'll be there just as soon as I can. I've just got to do this thing for the family, and I'll be right there. And it worked out. It worked out. Yep.
Oh, good. Another question here. Again, I appreciate all of you that are willing to ask. Some of these are tough questions. And so I'm glad that you have the freedom to be able to ask them here. And again, it's all anonymous, so nobody knows where they came from. But as a husband who's not wanting to have another child right now, mm-hmm. how can I comfort, deal with, or communicate that to my wife who maybe does want to have a child without it coming across that I don't care about her desire in this?
Right. We face that. And that's very difficult. We have two girls and a boy, boy, girl, boy. And Ruthie desperately, girl, boy, girl. What'd I say?
Boy, girl, boy.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I don't even know if we have children. I'm never home. I work and work and work to buy a golf cart. I mean, I'm never home. We have girl, boy, girl. Sorry. That's right. Please. Let it be a golf cart. Let it be a golf cart. So she said, I want to have a fourth child so that Nate will have a brother. And Ruthie got gestational diabetes, which meant that she could go full-blown diabetes if she had another child. It could happen. It wasn't a high risk, but there was a risk. And I was, you know, I was, when Allison was born, our last child, I was 30 years old, 31 years old. And I'll be honest with you, I'm hitting a big stride in the ministry. Our church is going. I am out. I am busy. And I was tired. And we, you know, our kids were small, so we're raising those kids. I was tired, and I thought, I don't think I can go through sleepless nights again with a baby. And our second, Nate, was terrible. He had all kinds of problems when he was a boy. And he would just at night scream and scream and scream. And we'd be up rocking him and helping him, feeding him. We couldn't pacify the kid. He was terrible. And we'd be up, you know, a good part of the night. And I would take the first shift. And I actually got to a point where I grabbed that kid and I said, stop it, just stop it. And it scared me. And so she would start taking that shift because I think I got to get up in the morning. I've got to go to work. I've got to do those things. And so I said to her, I don't think we should have another child. She's like, I really think we need to for Nate's sake. And I said, but honey, we might have another girl. Now he's got three sisters. And we came to the conclusion that, yeah, we're not going to do it. I'm going to be honest with you, to this day, there's still some regret in her heart that we didn't have another child. And I bear the responsibility for that. I take the heat for that. But I felt it was best for her health and for our family and for my sanity to stop at three. And so that's where we are at.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, he's correct in saying that. To the day I die, I wish I would have had a fourth one. Sorry, that's a good joke.
Oh boy. You're getting a golf cart. You're getting a golf cart. Oh, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. Oh, it'll be nice. That'd be nice.
No, but I say that to say this. You can't let something like that come between you.
Yeah.
Like, if I were to hang on to that for the rest of my life, it'd be like, you know what? I always wanted that. And you didn't. It could have ruined our marriage. And so I'm like, that was the choice he felt was best. And this was a time when I had to step back and say, all right, like, if that's what you really feel, then I have to go along with that. And so is it something that I will always wish? Yes. But I'm not bitter or angry at him for making that decision. And I feel like if I were, it would ruin our marriage, and we would have struggled for time. So there's going to be things in your life that maybe you wanted that you didn't get to pursue for what reason, you know, whatever reason. Don't let that be something that comes between you the rest of your marriage. Set that aside and move on and realize that everybody's going to have some things in life like that, right?
And you can find other ways to nurture that desire. You can help look after other children. You can foster. You can adopt. You can babysit. You can do those things. I will say that our grandchildren, I think, became somewhat of an answer to that. We have four grandchildren. We have our daughter is due the 27th of this month, so very close. That'll be number five. Our other daughter, Allison, is due in August. That's six grandkids. So we've got more than enough kids now to look after. I mean, I thought three was a lot. Now we got six little demonic children running around the house. And they're not demonic. They're angelic. But and one is close, and the other three are pretty good. But so I would say that. Or you just never sleep together again. Problem solved. Right there. So, yeah. No, that's in seriousness. You'd have to have that conversation. And it's hard. Somebody's going to cry. Somebody's going to be hurt. And somebody's going to have to bear the brunt. But you have to do what's best. And today, really, financially, it's tough. It's tough to have a large family. And you think about it, we're telling people not to have large families because how many vehicles can hold more than two car seats, right? To buy a van today, what are they? I don't know if they're here, but they're $60,000, $70,000 a home. They're a lot of money. So for a young family to put out that expense so that you can put three or four car seats in there, it's huge. And then just the price of groceries alone is astronomical. So those are some things that weigh as well. And I think the husband's thinking, how much am I going to have to work more to supply even more? And the wife will maybe say, well, it's not that much more to have four than it is three. It is more. It is more. And so that weighs into it well. But it's good communication. It's having an answer from the Lord. The Bible talks about, you know, having your quiver full. It doesn't necessarily give you a number, but there's a point where you can handle so much, and that's where you have to come to agreement in.
And how do you balance that with involvement in church life and life in general?
Yeah, great questions. Great questions. I'll start this one and tell you that we were maybe not the norm. We were very fluid in our relationship with the Lord individually and as a family. So I my kids were in church all the time. I mean, not only were they there on Sundays and Wednesdays and every special event, but they'd come over and help clean the church, just like pastors' kids do here. They're here a lot. There's probably not a day of the week that my kids didn't come to the church. We lived right next door to the church, which made it very easy for them and sometimes too easy. But they'd come over, hey, Dad, what are you doing? And I'd be working, and they'd come sit on my lap while I worked, or they'd be in the building playing in the nursery, or they'd be cleaning the church or whatever. So to say to my kids, okay, we're getting up at 6 o'clock and having devotions every day for an hour when you're 5, we didn't do that. We didn't do that. When we were in the car, we talked about Jesus. When we went on vacation, we went to another church, and we talked about church. We'd read our Bibles. You know, the kids would get up, we'd have breakfast, we'd go to the pool, and then we'd have Bible reading time, or we'd have singing time, or we'd have prayer time. We always prayed. We always prayed with them at night. We read the Bible at night before they went to bed, but we didn't have, you know, super structure. The two of us, we would have our devotion time. I would oftentimes have it. She'd have hers. And then we'd come together. And today, she has a devotion that she gets on a daily basis. And she'll say to me, hey, do you want to hear my devotion? Say, yeah, let's have it together. And we do more together than we probably have. But that satisfied and pacified us. So my spiritual leadership wasn't necessarily just having a devotion time in the home. It was all day, every day. When I meet my kids, my grandkids will be driving. I'll say, hey, look at that. God made that. God created that. And our God is the creator of this universe. And they'll say, well, what does that mean? And we'll talk about that. The music we play in the car has to do with Jesus. Our conversation, and we'll put things back and forth. So I tried to lead as a pastor in my home, as a regular guy who would take time with my family, but I didn't make it a drudgery. I didn't want my kids to think all we ever do is study the Bible. All we ever do is talk about Jesus things. I did want to have some separation, but at the same time, I wanted to include the Lord in everything we did. So my picture of leading my family spiritually was, I, number one, have to be right. I, number two, have to be able to offer the Bible to my family whenever needed or whenever I felt that it was necessary. I needed my kids to hear me pray, to pray intelligently, to pray for them, to get their needs and pray with them for their needs. And then I had a responsibility at nighttime to spend some time with my children, concluding the day with thoughts of how was your day? What did you do? How did Jesus play a part in that? And how will Jesus play a part in our lives tomorrow? And then we would pray together. And so I would do that. I had an open door policy. And our kids actually said this one time to us. We have great meal time. It used to be every Sunday the kids would come over. It's a little hard with me traveling now, but they'd come over. And they said, Dad, Mom, we appreciate that we could always share our thoughts and ask our questions. You didn't always agree and you wouldn't always support, but you allowed us to have the question, and then you'd always offer a good biblical answer. And I thought, mission accomplished.
We tried to foster opportunities for them to have their own devotions. Too, like, to this day, we try to get our married kids a couple's devotion book for one of their Christmas gifts. We got our grandkids' kids' devotion books for their Christmas gifts. So you give them that opportunity that they have something available to foster that in their own lives. And then I think a big thing to me, and I think sometimes this is a mistake that we can make, is you do a devotion time, but it's so important how we live it out in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter if you do a devotion time and then your kids see you constantly fighting, or you do a devotion time but then you're out and about and you're treating people unkindly. Like, you just erased any...
Or you're gossiping, or you're cheating on something.
Yeah, so you're erasing kind of any positive impact that that devotion time had. I think as important as that is, it's even more important to just live it out in front of them in everything you do, the way you treat people, the way you care about people, the way you treat each other, the way you treat them. I just think walking that in front of them on a regular basis is just so important.
My neighbors on the one side of me aren't saved. They're from Ireland. Great people, but they're not saved. And he is very allergic to grass. And so he's out cutting his grass one day, and man, his eyes are running, his nose is running, he's coughing and sneezing. And I said, man, what's going on? And his wife said, oh, he is so allergic to grass. It kills him to cut the grass. I said, I'll tell you what, from now on, I'll cut the grass between our houses. Don't worry about doing that. It's not huge, but I said, it'll at least help do that. And he said, why would you do that? And the Lord gave me this, and I said, Jason, I believe that that's what Jesus would do, and I want to show you Jesus in my life. I snowblow their driveway. He's working. He's got a construction job. He leaves very early in the morning, and I went out one day, and his wife's out there, and she's trying to shovel the driveway, and I said, nah, I'll get it. And I went over, and I snow. It took me 15 minutes. I blew the driveway out, and they were able to get out. He says, why did you do that? I said, because I want to show you Jesus in my life. I believe that's what Jesus would do. And it made an impact. And so then I was able to go over to another time. And I said, hey, guys, I want you to know I prayed for you this week. And I want you to know that you have a pastor next door. You don't come to my church, but I'm going to be your pastor. If you ever have any spiritual needs, you ever have a difficult time, your kids are in trouble, you come and see me. They were overwhelmed by that. They wept. And I said, I want to show you Jesus. And I was so impressed. I've tried to do that in my life. And not too long ago, a girl came to us, or came to Ruthie, I think, and said about Kayla. She said, what did she say about her being the testimony of Christ?
So she joined a mom group, and one of the girls in there had gone to church when she was younger but had some bad experiences. And she wrote a note, and she said, you're one of the first people I ever met that lives what they say they believe about Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, and to me, I thought, mission accomplished. And that's what we tried to do. So.
Also, I just had another thought. A golf cart with a snowplow.
Then you could do all the snow removal.
Yes. I know.
Not going to happen. I'm going to Florida. Where you can get a golf cart. Yeah, okay, yeah. We'll pray about that in our devotion time. Yeah. Do you want to start that one?
Well, my husband asked me because he was the pastor.
There are times I didn't want to go. Yeah, yeah.
No, I have much, so it might be ladies that find themselves in that position more. I think nagging is not the answer. But I do think coming home and sharing is huge. If you come home and say, I think this is another area where we as Christians can make mistakes. If you come home and you're critical, that's not going to...
Of the church and the message.
The church or the message or the music or people at the church, that's in no way going to encourage your spouse to be more faithful. So I think if you come home and say, oh, man, that service was so good today. And it was so practical and... oh, the music just spoke to my heart. And you just, I mean, obviously, when you do that with people, they're kind of like, oh, man, that makes me want to be a part of that. So if you come home and be really positive, and again, I think the most important thing is living it out before them. If you come home and tell them how great the service was, and then you treat them poorly, you know, it's not going to really make them want to be part of it more. So I think just come home, be excited about it. Share with them things that the Lord taught you through the message, or how the music spoke to your heart, or just things like that, and make it such a positive experience that they're going to want to be part of.
The Bible talks about how the influence of a godly woman can bring the salvation of her husband. You've got to live Christ. And my sister was very, very injured as a child in our church. A man took advantage of my sister and another girl. To be very transparent, was sleeping with my sister and another girl from the age of 12 to 14 in our church. He was a Christian school teacher. And it messed my sister up bad. It messed my family up. And she really struggled for a very long time. She came to me a few years ago, and finally we had a great conversation, and I got her, you know, headed back in the right direction, and she's doing much better. But she was married and divorced, and then she moved in with a guy that's not saved. And she now is in that point in her life where she wants him to come to church. And when I'm preaching in their area, they'll come and she'll say to me, I wish he would come with me all the time, but he doesn't come. And I say, well, why doesn't he come? And she said, for many years, I so criticized independent Baptist churches because of that hurt in my life. I criticized their teaching. I criticized their reaction. I criticized everything. And so she said to him, I think we need to go to church. And he goes, why would I go to a church like that? You've criticized it for 20 years. Damage done. So I don't know if he'll ever go. He's come when I've preached. He's been there. He's not received Christ. He's not saved. And she's burdened about that. But she says, it's just so hard to go to church alone, because everybody's coupled up, and you become that third wheel. And that's why a lot of people have a difficult time when your spouse doesn't come. And a lot of the preaching is geared to husbands and wives, and you have things like this, and you know they may or may not want to come, or they'll come reluctantly. And I would say this, if you're a guy and you're not going, man, you're doing a disservice, not only to yourself, but to your wife and to especially your kids. We had a guy in our church who, before he got saved, was an extreme atheist. And he found the Lord. He got saved. And he went to his family and said, hey, I found the Lord. I want you to come to church, and I want to read the Bible. And when you come over, we're going to pray. And his kids were like, Dad, our whole lives you told us there was no God. Now you want us just to mystically believe it? You trained us that there was no God. He died. His kids never got saved. And he died brokenhearted. You're doing a disservice. For me to take that time to go to church with my wife and get that from the Lord, and to give that peace of mind to her, what's a couple hours a week? What am I really missing out on by being home? I'm missing a lot. What do I get from being home? You're not getting a lot. There's something wrong with your walk if you don't want to be here. The Bible says, forsake not the assembling of ourselves together. Why? Because the coming of Christ is coming. We've been saying it for 2,000 years, but it is coming. And as that day approaches, and I think we see clearly today, it's coming, we need to be drawn to the things of Christ to be able to make it through that time. And if you're not doing that as a man, I feel sorry for your family that's going to have to face that without you. So there's a great importance to be there. Yeah.
What advice would you give to a wife who feels betrayed by her husband and children, feels like they lie, feels lied to by them?
That's tough.
Because those are the most intimate relationships in your life. That's really, really hard. I mean, we kind of hit on that a little bit at the end of the ladies' lesson. There's so much hurt in the world and so much struggle with relationships. And I think we have to find that satisfaction and that peace and that joy from our relationship with the Lord that doesn't erase the hurt that you experience from those types of things. But at least you have that one relationship that you know will never fail and will never lie to you and will never be unfaithful to you when you maintain that relationship. And I think that will be the one thing that can help you deal with those kind of feelings. And other than that, I just think it's kind of like we talked about. Unfortunately, we can't control their behaviors. You can try to communicate about it and say, you know, that really hurts me when I feel like you're not being honest with me. And you can try and communicate that, but realize that you can't control it. And again, we just kind of take that all to the Lord and have that walk with Him and trust Him to fulfill those needs in our lives. And then just pray. Just pray that God will reveal that. I had a teacher back in high school. She said that quote. I think it's kind of funny, but pretty applicable. She says, submission is learning to duck and let God hit your husband. And so she said, sometimes there's not really anything you can say that's going to change the situation. So all you can do is get out of the way and pray and say, God, please reveal to my husband, you know, that he needs to walk with you. And again, it's easy to be critical of the other person, but also to pray at the same time, Lord, show me what I can do to make this situation better. But sometimes we just have to step back and pray and say, Lord, I'm going to trust you to work in their life and reveal some things to them to make this relationship better.
I have to ask, why do they lie to you? Why do we ever feel a need to lie to someone? I would have to ask myself personally that question. Why does it seem they always want to lie to me? Is there something about me? Is there something in my life that maybe warrants that they do that? Maybe I overreact. Maybe I am too forward. I don't know. I don't know the situation, but I think you have to at least be honest and ask yourself that question, or ask them, why do you feel a need to lie to me? Why can't you just tell me the truth? Maybe it's to spare long periods of sorrow or depression. Maybe there's something that you're dealing with that they feel that they need to do that to help you. I don't know. Not knowing the whole situation, but I think that's, in a general sense, I think we do have to ask, why are people doing that? And that might give answer.
I think, too, within families, you have to be really careful that for husbands and wives to remember you're a team. Because you see that in a lot of families. It's almost like one parent and the kids almost like gang up on the other parent, like you divide. You see that on a lot of TV shows, like comedies, right? Mm. It's always like the dad comes home, he's a doofus, and the mom and the kids are like over here laughing at him and making fun of him. Mm-hmm. And sadly, sometimes you see that in real life. There's almost a division in the family. And a lot of times it'll happen if one parent is stricter, you know, then, you know, mom might be like, oh, dad won't let us do this, or whatever. And I think we have to be so careful that we remember we're a team in this. We're not working against each other.
We're one. We're one flesh.
We're one. And so we're not trying to put a division there, and make sure you're working together on that and not one of you kind of, you know, separating off the kids and you're almost two different teams. Mm. We have to be really careful about that. Mm.
Very good. The greatest quote came from Miss Ruthie.
Let God hit your husband. Yeah. There it is. It's right on the screen there for you. It's already up. And write that down. Put Ruth Stone at the end of that, would you?
My teacher. Linda Bershini. I still remember.
Linda Bershini.
Linda Bershini. Go ahead. Just a couple others we have here.
My
wife's body has changed quite a bit since we got married.
Yeah, mine hasn't.
So what can I do to make her feel more secure in our relationship that I'm still very attractive to her?
Good. We did discuss that in the men's portion. I talked about that very plainly. And that is important. I do realize that, you know, I can criticize, say, well, honey, you don't look the same, but I don't look the same either. I weighed 175 pounds when we got married. 175, and I'm up to 178. I mean, I'm ashamed. I'm literally almost twice the man I was when I got married. And I, how can I ever criticize a lady who has changed because she's had three children? I mean, she bore three children, and when she had kids, man, I mean, she was huge. She was. And if walking from the back, you'd never know, but the front is like a torpedo. It was huge. And it kind of a mark is women, that's their battle scars. How big did you get? I was out here. That's how they do it. But no, and I said to guys, I said, your wife is going to change, and she is not going to want to display herself. And that to us, man, we still find you attractive. I say this, and I don't want to be crude, but I say sexy never goes out of style. It never does. My wife, no matter what has changed in her, I still find her as more attractive than I did when I first married her. And I see those changes as life experience, and I do try to compliment her. I let her know, babe, you're hot. Babe, you're beautiful. I tell her those things and say those things, and she has no doubt in her mind that I have an attraction for her, right? When I say, hey, get to the door and fire the lips up, she knows. I'm ready to see her, and that doesn't play a part. Now, do I want to be uncontrolled, and do I want her to be uncontrolled on that? Absolutely not. A couple reasons. Health. As you get older, if you don't take care of your health, you're going to have problems. So we try to challenge each other. My wife walks 7,500 steps a day. I'll be watching TV and I hear, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And I'm like, what are you doing? I'm getting my steps in. I need 2,000 more steps. She's in there stepping. You know, she would walk. She was doing 10,000 steps for about 2 years. She walked 10,000 steps a day, 5 miles a day. And she'll say to me, hey, why don't you walk with me? And I'm like, good, good. You don't want to mess with perfection, do you? More Oreos. But no, I've become more conscious as well, and I've lost some weight. It's taken me a while, but I've lost some weight because I do want to be healthy, and I do want to be attractive. Our appearance is not near as important, guys. Like, wives don't care. This is utility. This is utility, right? It's not the same. So, but yeah, I do want her to be attractive. I want her to dress attractive. I want, in our intimate relationship, I want her to be special for that time. Yeah.
Yeah, as I say, a lot of it, and men, the women would get this, but not the men, a lot of it, no matter how much you say that, when you don't feel good about yourself,
yeah,
like, it's awesome. He is great about that. He compliments you all the time. If he didn't do that, I would probably be really insecure.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I've said that many times. I attribute a lot of times my security to my husband and my dad because they were both great about that. So if you don't have that, I'm sorry, because that does make a big difference. As a man, you need to know that. But as a woman, even if you say that, if we don't feel good about ourselves, sometimes we still struggle with that. So you just have to be patient and understand that even though you see us that way, we don't see ourselves that way. And so sometimes it just takes a woman a while to get past that and realize, he still loves me. I don't know. He still thinks I look good. I don't know why, but he does. You know? So yeah. You just have to take that and appreciate it and realize you may never feel that way about yourself, but if he does, that's awesome.
And when she says, does this make me look heavy? Just walk away. You can't win. You cannot win. If you say yes, you're done. If you say no, there's another recourse women have. I don't know. Just walk away.
Don't ask.
I don't ask her. I know how I look. So,
all right.
Great. Look in the mirror. Awesome.
We got two questions here.
Okay.
And we'll be done. My wife is very sensitive, so how can I safely bring up areas where we can improve our marriage without making her feel insecure?
You can't. You can't. You're just going to have to do it. You can do it without the insecurity, but you just have to be mindful that there are times when I speak to my wife and I'm going to say something. I know she's going to take it hard, but there are times when you have to say that. Some things that she's worn, I'd say, honey, I wouldn't wear that. That doesn't look good. She'll put it on and say, what do you think? I'll say, that doesn't flatter you. It doesn't do you justice. Or
I wear it every day.
Every day, just to spite me. No golf cart there. Next year's theme, golf cart. And she's done that with me. I'm sensitive too. I'm sensitive about some things. And she'll say to me, honey, you need to take care of that or watch that or look at that. And I get upset. I get mad. But then I think about it. I pray about it. And then I come back and I say, well, she's right. You know, and I'll deal with it. So you may have to say it and walk away. and give her some time to digest that. But you let her know. I'll say to her, you know, honey, that doesn't really flatter you. Could I get you something that does? Let's go shopping. I'll try to find something that I think works for you. Or, you know, I like my wife's hair long. I like it the way it is. She's always worn it about this length. And she'll go and she'll get it trimmed and it'll be shorter and I don't like it. And I'll say to her, honey, why do you get your hair cut so much? I like it that way. And she'll say, because I've got to keep the ends cut and, you know, it's getting long and I don't feel comfortable. So we've kind of had to work through that a little bit. And, you know, hair colorings and things like that. And sometimes we're just honest, but I try to do it gently and kindly. I don't say, well, that looks gross. Well, you're an idiot. You're dumb. Yeah. Duck. Oh, back. I got a light bulb in the back. Sorry, Lord. I thought I just got shot. So, yeah, you have to be kind. And
I would say from a woman's perspective, again, it's how you say things.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of it's how you say things.
And when
you say it. Yeah, so, like, if your wife has an outfit that you don't really care for, don't say it when she has it on. Right?
Just throw it away when she's not looking. Oops,
don't
ruined it.
No, just don't say it when she has it on. Maybe just later on say, you know, if she asks you about it when she doesn't have it on, say, oh, that's not one of my favorites. You can say it in a way like that. Because honestly, a woman will be like, if she thinks that, she'll like, I'm not going to wear that again. Right? You don't have to be like, oh, I don't really. She'll get the idea, you know. And just do it gently. And again, just the way you say things. Just women do get their feelings hurt. You just have to be aware of that and when you approach the subject. And I think, too, a lot of times my mom said that. When you want to talk about things with each other, take the burden on yourself. Like, make yourself part of the problem so the other person doesn't get too defensive. Like, if you say something like, you know, I just want to let you know, I know sometimes I'm not the best at communicating, so this is tough for me, but can we talk about this? Then you aren't forcing everything on the other person to say it's all their fault, right? Like, you never talk to me, and we never talk. You're creating some of the burden on you, and it creates a more open atmosphere to communicate, and that other person won't feel as defensive, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Very good. Last question. What do you get your wife if she's allergic to chocolate?
That's so sad.
I put a big red bow on and say, this, look at here. Look at it.
With a snow plow.
It's a real thing.
No, it's AI. It's AI. They don't have that. Shane is dead meat, okay, just so you know.
I thought it was a real thing.
It is. They have them.
Cool.
They have them. No traction, though. No traction. Yeah. What do you get your wife? Whatever she likes. Find out what she likes and get her that. So, you love chocolate, but I don't buy a lot of chocolate.
I do.
You buy a lot of chocolate, yeah. She buys dark chocolate and she keeps it in the house, stashed away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry because I don't eat it. But what do I get you? What do I? Yeah, right. You're going to Cracker Barrel, baby.
I'm not a huge, like, I don't need a ton of jewelry. I don't need a ton of
food. Ice cream.
Yeah.
Ice cream.
If he takes me out for ice cream, I'm a happy girl.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I think don't get stuck in a stereotype. Like, some guys think, oh, every woman wants flowers. Everyone wants this. I don't. I really, for me, I don't care about that. If he takes me for a Costco hot fudge sundae, I'm golden. So, yeah, figure out.
I'll say, where do you want to go to eat? I want to take you out for supper. And she'll say, well, I don't care, wherever you want to go. And I'll say, no, where do you want to go? And she'll say, can we go to Costco? I'm like, really? I said, I'm want to take you to Texas Roadhouse. She wants to go to Costco. And, like, she goes, I just want a hot dog and one of those sundaes. I'm like, okay. All right. Yeah. I saw a thing, I think it was on Instagram. The guy gets in the car and he goes, guess where I'm taking you for supper? And the wife goes, O'Malley's? And he's like, yeah, that's where I'm going to take you. Like, so, because all of us have that conversation. Where do you want to go? I don't care. Where do you want to go? I don't care. Anywhere you want to go. Where do you want to go?
Well,
I don't know.
I always tease about this, though, because they'll say, I want you to pick supper tonight. And I'm like, you go ahead. No, you pick. So I'll be like, okay, you want to go to, like, Chili's? And be like, No, how about something else? Something. Okay, how about Cracker Barrel? No. I'm like, how about Texas Roadhouse? Yeah, let's go. I'm like, why didn't you just say?
Because I'm trying to please you in my own selfish way to get what I want. Forget everything I taught you. Forget it all. That's it.
All right, that's great. I appreciate it. Well, we've got a few more things to give away here, so let's know if you can pull out.
Ruthie can do it.